Now, from Mayo Clinic, it's Medical Edge Weekend, the only show that gives you the chance to ask your questions to Mayo Clinic experts. Plus, we'll take you beyond the headlines for in-depth discussions of what developments in medicine mean to you. Information you want from specialists who know. Join the conversation by phone, email, or through Twitter by going to radio.mayoclinic.org. Now, with this week's program, here's your host, Dr. Tom Shives.
From the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, I'm Dr. Tom Shives. Welcome to Medical Edge Weekend.
And I'm Dr. Jess Dhaliwal. We're so glad you're spending part of your day with us.
You know, Jess, I know you're an ear, nose, and throat specialist, and you enjoy what you do, but did you ever think about being a dentist?
Sure. Did you?
Well, yeah. And, you know, the more I think about it, I wonder why I didn't do that. I mean, they always have a day off. The emergencies are rare. You know, you don't have to get up at night or in the middle of this program, or
right.
You don't have to work on the weekends normally. The malpractice insurance, I bet, is cheap. Now, you know, there's fluoride, so there aren't as many cavities as there used to be, but the population is aging, so there's a lot of restorative work. And do you know a kid who doesn't have braces? I mean, and they're all good golfers.
Well, no doubt it's a great job.
Well, today on Medical Edge Weekend, we're going to talk about the teeth and gums. And here's another question I have for you. The next time you visit your dentist, you want to think about this. A routine checkup could actually save your life.
It could save my life.
Yeah, how? Well, recent studies show that gum disease is actually a risk factor for heart disease. It's a risk factor for stroke. And it's a predictor of diabetes.
You know, actually, I did know that. And I know there's some talk among dentists to actually screen for these diseases by, you know, coming to the, you know, checking all their patients for high blood pressure, even elevated blood glucose, which is a sign of pre-diabetes or diabetes. So the next time you go get your checkup, you might be checking your vitals too.
It's interesting that by looking in someone's mouth, I think a dentist or a periodontist can tell a lot about the overall health of the person.
Mm-hmm.
Well, joining us today on Medical Edge Weekend is our friend the dentist, Dr. Philip J. Sheridan. He's a gum disease specialist in the business. He's known as a periodontist, and he'll tell us how to maintain healthy teeth and gums. And he'll explain whether you should invest in a toothbrush sanitizer, whether or not you ought to consider chewing sugarless gum, and if you should ask your dentist about plastic sealants, a protective covering for the back teeth, which some have recommended for kids and adults. Plus, he'll weigh in on the $1.4 billion, that's with a B, billion-dollar business of teeth whitening. Are all bleaching products the same? And we'll ask him, what's the fastest, the cheapest, and the best way to get the job done? We'll find out a little later in the hour.
And as always, he'll take your emails, phone calls, and tweets at the bottom of the hour. Plus, he'll dispel some of the most common dental myths in our segment, Myth or Matter of Fact. This week, it's okay to swallow mouthwash. Myth or matter of fact? You'll just have to stay tuned.
So let's meet today's guest, our friend, the dentist, Dr. Philip J. Sheridan. Dr. Sheridan, welcome back. Always good to see you.
Thank you very much. Good morning. After the beginning of that introduction, I was going to explain to you, I have to leave now. I have a tea time.
Yeah.
He's a little resentful because his golf game may not be as good as yours.
I guess to be fair, did you ever wish you were a doctor?
No.
Well, I can understand why. Well, welcome back. It's great to see you, as always. The first thing I want to ask you about is the toothbrush sanitizer, because I saw a lot of ads for these devices over
because
the holidays.
Because you've been watching Home Shopping Network in the middle of the night, and they talk about toothbrush sanitizers being the best thing coming. So,
yeah, being a doctor, I'm up most of the night. As opposed to a dentist who's sleeping. What do you think of these? You know, and even the CDC came out with a statement that said, and I got to read this. The CDC, even after being rinsed visibly clean, toothbrushes can remain contaminated with potentially pathogenic organisms. Pathogenic means disease-causing organisms. But it seems to me, Dr. Sheridan, like all of us put a lot dirtier things in our mouth than the toothbrush. So do we really need a toothbrush sanitizer?
No, we don't. That statement, and it really was a statement made by the CDC, but if you go to their online site, they'll clarify that. That's taken out of context, I guess you might say. under their recommended toothbrush care. Now, this is the CDC, and it's on the internet. There are statements on do not share toothbrushes, and that's common sense that you wouldn't share a toothbrush with someone else. After brushing, rinse your toothbrush thoroughly with tap water. Allow it to dry. Do not let your toothbrush contact another's brush. It says it is not necessary to soak toothbrushes in disinfecting solutions or mouthwash. This practice can actually add to cross-contamination if more than one person is using these solutions. And they make the statement, it is also unnecessary to use dishwashers, microwaves, or ultraviolet devices to disinfect toothbrushes. These measures can damage your toothbrush. They suggest that the toothbrushes routinely be kept in closed containers after they're dry, and you replace your toothbrush every 3 to 4 months, but it really isn't necessary to have a toothbrush.
And remember the last time you were here, someone had recommended that you keep your toothbrush, what was it, 20 feet away from your toilet bowl?
Yes, I guess things jump out of the toilet when you flush it. I'm not sure.
So for all those people who bought a friend or relative a toothbrush sanitizer for Christmas, they probably don't need to tell them that they don't need to use it. Or they might as well tell them, hey, you know, it was a great gift, but you don't need to use it.
But how many people actually keep their toothbrush in a closed container after they brush? Or how many people actually rinse it thoroughly after they brush? So, I mean, it's possible that you are getting toilet splatter on your toothbrush, as disgusting as that sounds. It's possible that it is remaining dirty.
Well, is it not?
Am I defending the toothbrush sanitizer to people of the world?
Move your toothbrush.
Okay. Thank you. I will.
All right. So let's talk about something more important. And that is the fact that periodontal disease, gum disease, is in fact a predictor, is it not, or a risk factor for heart disease, stroke, and now maybe diabetes.
Well, there are a lot of people that think that there is an association or that periodontal disease might be a risk factor for coronary artery disease, low birth weight babies, even some risk of diabetes. The data isn't there yet to prove that this is a fact, but it certainly is a concern. And there are a number of studies that have shown that there's a relationship between significant periodontal disease and coronary artery disease. There was a recent study published, and a lot of people don't like to hear this, a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine that was unable to establish a relationship between periodontal disease and low birth weight babies. So this hasn't been decided yet.
Is it because periodontal disease, or those that say that there is a link, is it because periodontal disease directly causes or exacerbates coronary artery disease, or is it because it's reflective of the overall health of the person? So
no.
If they have bad gums, they might not be taking care of themselves in terms of their heart as well.
Well, no, the theory is that it's an inflammatory process. Periodontal disease, periodontitis, there's inflammation in the gum tissue. And so does this contribute to coronary artery disease, or can this play a role in diabetes or your control of your diabetes? And it really can in terms of diabetes. Low birth weight babies, don't know for sure. But there are a lot of people that are concerned about this.
Do you think in general, you've had a lot of experience, you've looked in a lot of mouths, would you say that there is in general a relationship between the health of the teeth and gums and the overall health of the individual that you're working on?
In many cases, yes. And in many, many times it's because the patient doesn't take care of the teeth and gums, and they may also not take care of their general health.
Sugarless gum. Some have suggested that if you can't brush, sugarless gum is a good alternative. And it's not just any sugarless gum, though. It has to contain xylitol in it. Is that correct?
You've
been to Target again, haven't you?
Yeah, I have, and I brought gum with me this morning. Unfortunately, it was in my car, and it's frozen, so you'll break your teeth if you try and chew this stuff. But the one product, I've got a number of products here. The one product here says it contains a natural germ-killing ingredient. And I went through this trying to figure out what this natural germ-killing ingredient is. And it's actually magnolia bark extract. But I don't know what germs it kills. So I can't endorse that one. And then some of these others, the sugarless gums contain sorbitol, which makes it sweet, but sorbitol doesn't do anything to control gums in the mouth. But you're absolutely right. Xylitol is what we're looking for in these gums. And one of these gums, actually it's a Trident gum, contains both xylitol and Recaldent. And Recaldent is a form of amorphous calcium phosphate, which helps to remineralize teeth. So there may be some merit in using the sugarless gum. And on the back of one of these packages, they have the ADA seal. And what it states, and you have to understand what they're saying here, is that the ADA Council on Scientific Affairs says that chewing this sugar-free gum for 20 minutes after eating stimulates saliva flow, which helps to prevent cavities by reducing plaque acids and strengthening teeth. So we're just talking about you could maybe chew rubber and stimulate salivary flow and get the same effect. The xylitol, however, is a different thing. The xylitol actually inhibits strep mutans, and strep mutans is the number one bacteria in decay, in cavities, in teeth. So xylitol really does work, and xylitol helps. So if you do chew gum, look and see if there's xylitol in it, because that will have a positive effect.
Now, let me ask you this. Why doesn't the ADA come out and try to regulate what gum makers or, you know, mouthwash makers can say on their product? Because it does. It seems like every product makes some kind of claim in terms of whitening teeth or protecting teeth or preventing cavities. Why is there not more regulation of these products?
Well, why doesn't the FDA do that? The ADA doesn't have the power to do that. The only thing that the ADA, when we say ADA, we're talking about the American Dental Association. The only thing that the ADA can do is give their seal of acceptance or seal of approval. And the way they do that is the company has to do some research and demonstrate that this product actually does what they say it does. You have to read the seal carefully, though, or read and see what it says, because you may expect that because it's also a whitening gum or it does other things, that the ADA says that, and they don't. In this case,
how does a gum whiten teeth, though?
Oh, I don't know.
I bought this,
and it's supposed to whiten your teeth, but I don't know how it whitens your teeth. I haven't figured that out. I read all the ingredients.
All right, but if you're going to buy or chew sugarless gum, look for one with xylitol in it. And all those packages that you've got, the only one with xylitol is Trident Extra Care.
Well, this Trident, but there are other brands. There are other brands with xylitol. I would suggest that you read the ingredients, and if there's xylitol in there, that's a good thing.
All right, because it kills some of the bacteria that lead to tooth decay.
Or inhibits them. It might not necessarily kill them, but it keeps them from acting. So it's a positive effect that it has.
All right, Jess, it's break time. Open that up.
I will.
I'll chew some. Coming up, myth or matter of fact, sugar is the primary cause of cavities. Is that true or is that false? We'll get the answer coming up when we talk more with the dentist and periodontist, Dr. Philip J. Sheridan. And right after the news, at the bottom of the hour, we'll take your phone calls for Dr. Sheridan, 507-282-1234, or you can get in touch with us by email by going to our website, radio.mayoclinic.org, or you can tweet us. It's simple, #MayoRadio. Up next, this week's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge with Vivian Williams.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic's Medical Edge. Every year, thousands of patients have their wisdom teeth removed. But if so many need to be removed, have you ever wondered why we have them?
The purpose thousands of years ago was you needed them because you lost other teeth.
Dr. Chris Viazzi is an oral and maxillofacial surgeon at Mayo Clinic. He says that as our diet evolved to include softer, highly processed foods, life for our teeth became easier. We don't lose them like we used to, but that's the problem. Our wisdom teeth are still there, and often there's not enough space to accommodate them.
Whether they're completely impacted or partially erupted, they can cause problems. And those problems can range from annoying problems to very serious ones.
If you do need your wisdom teeth removed, it's better to do so when you're young, typically between the ages of 15 and 25. The difficulty of surgery and the rate of complications increase in older patients. For more information, talk to your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Vivian Williams.
It's time to brush our teeth, brush our teeth. Brush them and get them all clean. It's time to brush our teeth, brush our teeth. Brush them and get them all clean.
Welcome back to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend. Dr. Tom, Dr. Jess, and our friend the dentist, Dr. Philip J. Sheridan. I guess you don't need to brush. You're chewing the gum with the xylitol.
I know.
So you're clean. You're good.
My teeth feel whiter and cleaner I'm speaking.
Hit us with a myth or matter of fact.
Okay. Are you ready to dispel some of the most common dental myths?
Yes.
Okay. Your natural teeth have to be shaved down to get veneers. And for those of you who might not know what veneers are, why don't you explain that to us?
A veneer is a very thin filling that's put on the facial aspect of the outside of the tooth, generally to make it look white or make it look pretty, or it's a cosmetic procedure to improve the appearance of a tooth. And generally, it is necessary to reduce the tooth very, very slightly. It's almost like thinking about an artificial fingernail. These things are made of porcelain. They're very nice. And they're bonded to the tooth. The dentist glues them or bonds them to the tooth.
Complications with those? I mean, a lot of people have those now. I mean, you see somebody and say, God, their teeth look great, better than they did when 10 years ago.
And some people say 90% of celebrities have veneers, too.
That may be true. The only complication with them is a risk, and the risk is they can break. They're thin, and if you bite an ice cube or bite into something hard, bite a spoon with your front tooth accidentally, you can crack them, you can break them, and they have to be replaced.
With any cosmetic surgery, you might not like the way your new teeth look. Isn't that correct?
That would be rare. Most people are very pleased with veneers and very happy with the way their teeth look because I think they always look better than whatever.
Yeah, and they're just glued on. And if you break one, you just put another one on.
That's right.
How about this one? Halitosis, or bad breath, can be caused by something other than poor oral hygiene.
Well, I think as an ENT physician, you know the answer to that question.
Yep. I think I probably see as much bad breath patients as you do. Well, maybe you see a little bit more, but...
We send the ones with bad breath to you.
I'm happy to see anybody, okay.
Well, we didn't answer the question. The answer to the question is bad breath can be caused by a variety of things outside of the mouth. And if you have the postnasal drip this time of the year, that may smell bad. If you had garlic or radishes last night, you may have bad breath. There are some instances where odor can come from the stomach. Chemicals can cause bad breath. People with diabetes, uncontrolled diabetes, sometimes have what they call ketone breath, which is a chemical smell. So lots of things can cause.
Tonsillitis can cause bad breath.
And the tongue, too. You're a big proponent of brushing your tongue, right?
I am. The tongue is the major dental or oral cause of malodor, and that's if you stick your tongue out in the morning and it's coated, it probably smells. So brushing it or scraping it each morning when you brush your teeth is important, and it'll make your breath fresh, and it's the appropriate thing to do.
Use a putty knife for that, or is there a special device for
thick,
your tongue?
Maybe, but you can use a spoon. You can use this is one case where you could use a stiff toothbrush or a hard toothbrush. In every drugstore, every pharmacy, they have tongue scrapers available.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So answer this for me. Is it okay to swallow mouthwash?
It probably is okay, but it contains some of the mouthwashes contain a fair amount of alcohol, which might not be a good thing. It usually doesn't do any harm, but mouthwashes are intended to be expectorated.
And spit out, not swallowed.
Right.
Is it better to use an alcohol mouthwash or an alcohol-free mouthwash?
That's a controversy, and I just soon not get into that controversy. But for some people, they actually should avoid the alcohol-free mouthwash, especially if it's bothersome or if it burns. But for most people, I don't think there's any harm in using a mouthwash that has alcohol. I don't want to endorse anything, but one of the most commonly endorsed, at least by dentists, mouthwashes, Listerine, has a high alcohol content.
Oh, so as long as we're on the subject of mouthwash, there is some evidence out there that mouthwashes with a low pH, very acidic, can actually destroy enamel, and you ought to avoid those. Is that true?
I've seen that list of mouthwashes and the pH, and the pH in those mouthwashes usually isn't as low as things that are much worse, the hard candies, the sour candies that the kids use, and sometimes adults. Even the pH of soda, various kinds of soda, is sometimes lower, more acid than the mouthwashes. So I don't think there's anything wrong with using mouthwash. Probably the only thing that I would suggest patients might think about when they use a mouthwash is to brush, floss, clean the teeth, and then use the mouthwash. And the only reason for suggesting that is this possibility that the acid in the mouthwash or the acetic property of the mouthwash might actually affect the enamel of the teeth just a little bit and soften it a little bit. So if you brush the teeth first, it may be a negative thing to expose your mouth to acid and then brush the teeth, because there are a lot of people that feel that you're going to wear away a little bit of tooth surface if you've exposed the tooth surface to acid.
I'm so glad you brought up sour candies, because I looked up a list of the pH values for most sour candies. Mm-hmm. And if you think that a neutral pH is 7 and battery acid has a pH of 1, mm-hmm. and somewhere in between, like 4, is where the enamel starts wearing down. Just listen to this. So let's start with the Warheads Sour Spray Candy. That has a pH of 1.6. And remember, battery acid is 1.0. Wonka Pixie Sticks, do you remember those?
Don't.
Okay, well, I'm not surprised about that. But
before my time, probably.
Wonka Pixie Sticks have a pH of 1.9. Now and Later Cherry Chews, you've for sure had Now and Laters, those little square candies.
I don't
and
think
the paper
so.
Kind
See,
of sticks to them.
My mom took good care of me.
Oh, my.
Now, have we established
you had
the
no
fact,
fun as a child.
Have we established the fact that these acidic things are bad for enamel?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Okay, so they have a pH of 1.9, and the list goes on and on. Starburst. You've heard of Starburst.
I have that. Yep.
2.4. I mean, this is like significantly less than what it takes to wear away teeth. And isn't it true, Dr. Sheridan, that these sticky candies actually stick to your teeth? So the amount of time that your enamel is exposed to these acidic candies is much, much longer than, say, mouthwash?
Some of them do, and sucking them certainly doesn't help. And so dentists are seeing a lot of youngsters with decay and loss of enamel and tooth destruction as a result of using these things. Now, you talk about pH. Pepsi-Cola is 2.49.
Oh, my gosh.
So there's a lot of acid out there that can destroy our enamel.
You have heard of Pepsi-Cola, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah. Okay. You're listening to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend. Our guest, dentist and periodontist, Dr. Philip J. Sheridan of the Mayo Clinic, coming up this week's Health and Medical News with Vivian Williams. And right after that, your phone calls, your emails, your tweets. This is Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend.
I'm Vivian Williams with a look at health and medical news. For the first time in more than a decade, teen pregnancy rates are on the rise. That's according to a report by the Guttmacher Institute, an organization that studies reproductive health. Their data shows that in 2006, teen pregnancy rates increased 3%. There was a downward trend in the 1990s, which some experts say corresponds to teens' contraceptive use. ABC News reports that some experts blame federal programs that teach abstinence alone instead of a variety of birth control options. They also report that abstinence educators say that teaching about contraceptives sends kids a mixed message. In other news, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention finds that 1 in 5 American youths have abnormal lipid levels. The CDC says abnormal lipid levels are risk factors for heart disease, which is the leading cause of death for adults in the U.S. In the study, researchers analyzed measurements of LDL, or bad cholesterol, HDL, or good cholesterol, and triglycerides. They found that young people who were overweight or obese were more likely to have one or more abnormal lipid levels compared to normal weight kids. The CDC says usually heart disease develops in adulthood, but risk factors such as abnormal lipids and obesity often emerge in childhood. They say work is needed to combat the obesity problem in kids. And from Mayo Clinic, preventing deadly ruptures of the brain is the aim of a new Mayo Clinic project to help doctors detect aneurysms faster and with more accuracy. The new method uses technology developed by Mayo and IBM and has proven a 95% accuracy rate in detecting aneurysms. Here's Dr. Bradley Erickson.
Aneurysms are an important disease to detect. The major risk is that the aneurysm, which essentially is a weak spot in the wall of an artery, in this case inside the brain, and as you can imagine, if it's a weak spot, like in a tire, it will pouch out and can rupture. And when they rupture, oftentimes it's deadly, and it's the first time you sense it. But if it ruptures, sometimes people live, but they can have a significant deficit because of the damage it does to the brain in that region. So it's an important thing to detect. If we detect them before they rupture, and oftentimes we do, then they can be treated either surgically or endovascularly, and the risk of rupture goes down significantly.
Already saving lives, this project uses technology that highlights aneurysms for faster detection. This helps doctors identify them before they rupture and cause damage. And that's a look at health and medical news. I'm Vivian Williams.
When you wake up in the morning and it's 12:45, you want to have a little fun. You brush your teeth. You brush your teeth. When you wake up in the morning.
Welcome back to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend. Dr. Tom, Dr. Jess, and this week's guest, Dr. Philip J. Sheridan, our friend the dentist. He's a gum disease expert as well as being a dentist, so he will give us information on the teeth and gums that you know is accurate, reliable, and unbiased. Time for you to join the program. Tweets, emails, and telephone calls. Let's go to Dorothy. She's been waiting the longest. Dorothy, good morning. Let me click you here. Thanks for being with us. Hello, Dorothy.
Hello, Dr. Sheridan.
Yes, ma'am.
I thank you for taking my call. In December of 2008, I had a reclassed injection for bone therapy.
Right.
And was told to inform my dentist. Now, in the last 3 months, I did not get one this year. In the last 3 months, my teeth on the lower jaw have been really loosening. I've lost a filling, and I'm getting decay around the gum line. Could this be a result of the injection?
No, it doesn't have anything. I don't think it has anything to do with the injection. Certainly the filling doesn't, and loosening of the teeth should not. The bisphosphonates, the injection of the bisphosphonates is done to preserve bone. Sometimes it's done because you have osteoporosis. Sometimes cancer patients are given these injections. The reason for informing the dentist is there's some concern about something called osteonecrosis, which can occur after you've had this kind of medication, injection of this kind of medication. It usually occurs after extraction of a tooth or some type of a dental surgical procedure. But every once in a while, it can occur as a result of some kind of a trauma, scraping and cutting the gum tissue inside the mouth with a piece of toast or banging it too hard with your toothbrush and damaging it. So this is a very unpleasant and bad side effect that can occur as a result of taking this drug, but it shouldn't cause loosening of the teeth or problems with fillings. Your dentist might have some concern if he has to extract a tooth. But we don't know the real risk as far as how many patients will develop osteonecrosis with an extraction or with some kind of surgery. It's a low risk, but it's legitimate, and so that's why they tell you to tell your dentist.
And did you explain that osteonecrosis means death of the bone?
Yeah.
And there are some instances, relatively few, of patients who have had bisphosphonate injections, like reclast, for osteoporosis, who have developed this condition. But it's pretty rare, isn't it?
It's pretty rare. In the patients, when we do see these patients, we usually put them on antibiotics for a period of time and mouthwashes that inhibit bacteria, stronger prescription mouthwashes that inhibit bacteria. And the vast majority of patients who develop this problem heal up over a period of time. But the difference is it takes a long time to heal when this bone is exposed and dies. But nature usually takes care of it, and eventually it resolves.
Thanks, Dorothy.
Oh,
appreciate the call.
You.
You're so welcome. All right, let's go to Norma. Good morning, Norma. Thanks for being with us. You're up with Dr. Sheridan.
Good morning. I had 3 dental implants done about 3 years ago. And just recently, they've begun to hurt a little bit, just like I have a cavity in them. Why is this?
I don't know the answer, but you need to see your dentist for an examination to try to figure this out. The vast majority of patients who have dental implants do just fine and don't experience any pain at all because there are no nerves in dental implants. But like anything, you can develop problems around implants, and once in a while, someone will develop what we call peri-implantitis, which is a little bit of infection that occurs around an implant, and the gums can get red, pus can form, and the patient can have problems. So if you're having discomfort, the best thing to do is to see the dentist and have the dentist figure out why you have a problem and take care of it.
Thank you.
You bet, Norman. Thanks so much for your call. 507-282-1234. Gum disease expert, Dr. Philip J. Sheridan. He's a dentist at the Mayo Clinic. 507-282-1234. How about a couple of emails, Jess?
Well, let's go to a quick tweet, shall we? Joe wants to know, what is your opinion on Waterpik?
Waterpik are not everyone needs a Waterpik, but Waterpik are very helpful for some people. Waterpik flush food and debris and things out from the mouth. And if you have a Waterpik after you've eaten a hamburger and use your Waterpik, you'll see all sorts of little pieces of meat and things come out of the mouth. And
that's
they are
good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good. It's good. That's good. That's
unless
good.
You're saving it for later.
Not so good. So, but Waterpik are very helpful for some patients. And I generally suggest that you talk to your dentist and to your hygienist about whether or not you really would benefit from using a Waterpik, because most people probably don't need a Waterpik. And they're a bit of a hassle. You have to fill the tank with water and squirt it around, and it fills the sink and takes time. And it's important to do what is important to clean your teeth, the brushing and the flossing. And if it's needless time spent, there's no point.
You're not a big fan.
I'm not a big fan of water picks. So you can kind of tell.
Water picks are, I think they're about $50. So would you suggest taking that $50 and investing in an electric toothbrush?
Absolutely. If you don't have an electric toothbrush, that'd be my vote any day.
Well, which one do you like? I got the green one today. You know, I love it when it comes to always getting a new toothbrush.
And Jess got the purple one there.
I have the Oral-B Cross-Action Power Dual Clean toothbrush.
Well, it's a little fancier than mine. I just have the Colgate Motion.
Well, I'm going to go to my source, and that's Consumers Reports. Actually, I've got the March 2010 issue of Consumers Reports.
And What's that say?
They looked at the toothbrushes, and they looked at the various – they looked at Oral-B and the Sonicare and the Spin Brush and a number – all the things that are available out there. And the two brushes that ranked the highest were an Oral-B and the Sonicare brush. And they're the most expensive brushes. And what they found in their little study is that these two brushes removed at least 75% of the plaque, and the other ones didn't remove quite as much. But brush number 5, which is recommended, is the Spin Brush by Arm & Hammer for $15, which is a pretty good deal.
Yeah. But
what amazes me about these electric toothbrushes is when you use them, you don't really feel like you're actually scrubbing your teeth as you do with like a regular conventional
But that's
toothbrush.
Okay, isn't it? I mean, it's still, as long as it gets the job done.
You always want to use a soft toothbrush because hard toothbrushes can damage the gums. They can wear away enamel on tooth structure. So it doesn't have to be a hard brush. And the way that the Consumers Reports tested these was they had people not brush for 24 hours. Then they had a dentist put stain on the teeth to show the plaque. Then they had the people brush, and they stained again, and I don't know exactly how you determine 75%, but they removed more than 75% of the plaque.
All right, let's go to Darlene, because she's got a follow-up question. She wants to know, when's the best time to brush? Good morning, Darlene. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Is that your question?
Yes.
All right.
Wondered about the timing of brushing your teeth, because I've heard that immediately after you've eaten, there are acids that may soften them.
I know. I've heard that same story, and I don't know the answer.
You don't buy it?
I don't know the answer to that, but I think it's very safe to brush. You could rinse your mouth with water and then brush your teeth and neutralize most of those acids. I don't think you're going to do great harm brushing your teeth after eating. So my suggestion would be brush after breakfast and brush at bedtime, at least brush after breakfast and brush after bedtime. And if you have the opportunity to brush after lunch, that's a good thing. Most people don't eat and then immediately take a toothbrush and brush their teeth. If you're brushing before bed, it probably has been a few hours since you've eaten. After breakfast, it's going to be a little while. So I don't think we need to worry that much about the acids. How much acid are we exposed to with breakfast? Same thing with dinner. Now, hard candies and other things where we're exposed to acid or drinking Pepsi or Coke or any of those beverages that are high in acid, can be maybe a concern, brushing immediately after doing that. But after eating, I don't think there is much.
Maybe
of a
she
problem.
Should invest in sugarless gum with xylitol.
Yeah, xylitol.
There you go, Darlene. No, after breakfast, before you go to bed
you
at
want
night.
To brush.
Thanks for the call. All right, another email.
Oh, yes. Let's go to Bob Anderson. He wants to know, he recently came down with actinomycosis. That's a bacteria, pathogenic bacteria. I learned that I can get this rare disease from having my teeth cleaned. It's been treated successfully with penicillin, an antibiotic, but now I have a sebaceous cyst. Is all of this related to oral health? How about the connections to heart disease? Thanks, and I'll be listening. Well, thanks, Bob, for your question.
Wow. Actinomycosis is infections with actinomycosis are relatively rare. However,
is this in the mouth has the actinomycosis?
Yes.
Okay.
And actinomycosis can be found often in the mouth and in the nose. There are actinomycosis israeli and nasalundi in some of these various types of actinomycosis, but they're usually not pathogens and they usually don't cause a problem. What triggers, what causes them to become pathogens, I'm not sure.
Pathogenic meaning causing an infection,
causing infection.
A clinical problem.
That's right. It is rare. It's interesting that this question came in because I'm currently treating a lady with an actinomycosis infection. She's responding very, very well, but I haven't seen one in a long time and I just got one 2 weeks ago. But the bacteria is frequently there. I don't know why cleaning your teeth would cause the infection. That I don't understand at all. I can see if you had a tooth extracted and it got into the socket, or if it went through the nerve canal of a decayed tooth and got in, or if there was some type of injury damage where the gums were cut for some reason, you could develop an infection. But still, it's rare. And I'm not sure why someone told you that this occurred as a result of having your teeth cleaned. I guess I really wouldn't worry about that. It would have to happen twice before I'd believe that. I'm glad it was treated with penicillin. That's usually the drug of choice to treat the actinomycosis infections. The sebaceous cyst has nothing to do with that infection. The sebaceous cyst probably relates to the genes that you got from your grandma. Some people are more susceptible to cysts, and that's probably a genetic thing. Is this all related to your oral health? No, I don't think you certainly didn't cause the sebaceous cyst. You didn't cause the infection, so you could be a good brusher and good flosser and still run into these kinds of problems. Is there a connection to heart disease? No connection to heart disease. The only exception would be if you developed an infection on the valves of your heart as a result of your actinomycosis, and that would be really rare. But does this have anything to do with your coronary artery disease? The answer is no.
I liked Bob's question. Want to send him a copy of the Mayo Clinic Book of Alternative Medicine. It's one of lots of Mayo Clinic books. This one, The New Approach to Using the Best of Natural Therapies and Conventional Medicine Together. Straight answers from the world's leading medical experts. Bob, thanks so much for your question. All right, let's go to Larry. Good morning, Larry. I know you've been waiting for a while. Appreciate you being with us. Go ahead with Dr. Sheridan.
Yeah, just curious what you think of these snowbirds that go to South Texas and get their vacation paid for or have their teeth done while they're down there.
Are you talking about...
That's on the Mexican border.
I understand. We cross the border and get dental care in Mexico. Well, it's a lot less expensive. The quality... there may be some very good care provided, but on the other hand, the quality of some of the restorations, the crowns that people get is not up to the standards of the dentist here in your hometown. So sometimes you get what you pay for, and that may be the case. And there are instances where you can get some very nice restorations and people do good work, but there also are some things that are not so good.
Thanks, Larry. Sounds like the doctor is a little bit leery. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Mike. Good morning, Mike. You're up next with Dr. Sheridan.
Good morning.
Morning.
With a history of osteoporosis and then diagnosed and then taken the medicine and been told when you've been looking at getting an implant done, after time goes by, would you maybe able to get an implant done?
Yes. Actually, I don't hesitate to place implants in patients who are currently using bisphosphonates. The placing implants in patients using bisphosphonates doesn't seem to present a risk. We've not experienced any problems at all. It's a little different because when you place an implant, you open the gum tissue, make a little hole in the bone, you plug that hole with the implant and close the gum tissue. So there is no exposed bone, and the risk of osteonecrosis has to be extremely low.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Let's go to this email question. My mouth smells and gums bleed occasionally. I am obese. What are the causes for those things and consequences and remedies?
Well,
I'm sure you can comment on the gums bleeding and the mouth smelling.
Yes, absolutely we can. The odor, we've talked a little bit about odor previously, and the bad breath can be related to periodontal pockets because bacteria live in those periodontal pockets. If there's any type of even low-grade infection, that provides an odor. If your oral hygiene is not good, and sometimes that's the reason for the bleeding of the gums, if your tongue is coated, we talked about coated tongues, there are a lot of reasons for malodor. You state that you're obese. Are you diabetic? You know, with obesity, there is higher risk of diabetes. Could you have ketone breath because you don't know you're a diabetic? And so that's one of the things that's happening. Those are hard things to know, but there are a lot of explanations for the reason your mouth smells. And it's a good reason to see the dentist and ask the dentist, why do I have malodor? The gums bleeding is not normal. They shouldn't bleed. They should be healthy. If they bleed, that means there's inflammation there. Do you have calculus on your teeth that needs to be scraped off and cleaned? Are you not removing the plaque the way you should? The dentist, the hygienist, those people can help you with those things. So one of the first things would be to see the dentist, see the hygienist, and discuss all these things because they're things that they do every day.
All right. You know, we're almost out of time, and we haven't talked about whitening. So I want to know, in 45 seconds or less, what's the cheapest, the fastest, the best way to get your teeth whitened?
Three different answers.
Well, you got 10 seconds for each.
Cheapest is go quickly to the pharmacy and buy white strips or something that you can apply yourself. That's the least expensive. And for some people, it's very satisfactory. If it isn't adequate, then the dentist has a stronger bleach that can be applied to the teeth. If there's a question about crowns on your teeth, they don't bleach. And your natural teeth and staining of teeth because of other old restorations or things that have been done, root canals, you really should consult the dentist because they can help you with this. And the dentist will be able to help you do the best job. But for a lot of people, just the strips from the pharmacy are very adequate.
All right. And then the important other things to remember are you got to brush at least twice a day. And the times to do that are after breakfast, before you go to bed at night.
Right.
You're not a big fan of the pulse machine, the water pick.
No, but that's okay.
The toothbrushes, what's number one on your list there? The Sonicare and what else?
The Consumer's Reports says Sonicare and Oral-B, and they are excellent brushes.
The one for $15 that you like?
That was an Arm & Hammer spin brush from Consumer's Reports.
Thanks so much for being with us, Dr. Sheridan. Okay. Appreciate it. Thanks to everyone also in our audience. Thanks for your phone calls, your emails, your tweets. You are the most important part of the program. You're listening to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend. Coming up, we'll tell you about next week's program. Stay with us. Welcome back. Next week on Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend, we'll talk about coronary artery disease. That's blockage of the arteries that supply your heart. Obviously pretty important, but it's a problem that affects a lot of older Americans. And we'll visit with the director of the Mayo Clinic Cardiac Catheterization Lab, Dr. Chet Rehal. We'll talk about the risk factors for coronary artery disease, who's likely to get it. We'll talk about the diagnosis, and we'll talk about the treatment. And, you know, there's medical management, there's the stents that they put in to hold the arteries open, and there are still, unfortunately, some people who need a CABG or need the heart bypass surgery. And, you know, there are some amazing things that they're now doing in the cardiac catheterization lab, and one of them is percutaneous heart valve replacement. So they can repair or replace your heart valve without cracking your chest.
I'm sure there's never a dull moment in a cardiac cath lab.
Ooh, absolutely. It'd be fun to work there, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I hope you'll join us next week, All About the Heart with Dr. Chet Rehal. For more information on topics discussed on this program, please go to our website, radio.mayoclinic.org, or you can visit us at mayoclinic.com, where physicians, scientists, and researchers from Mayo Clinic share their expertise to empower you to manage your health. You've been listening to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend. Our senior producer is Lee Acey. Our associate producer, Joel Streed. Our technical director is Kim David. Our theme music was written and performed by none other than Chip Davis of Mannheim Steamroller. For Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend, I'm Dr. Tom Shives.
And I'm Dr. Jess Dhaliwal.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Any medical information conveyed during this program is not intended as a substitute for personal medical advice, and you should not take any action before consulting a healthcare professional. For more information, please go to our website, radio.mayoclinic.org. Please join us each week on this station for more of the medical information you want from Mayo Clinic specialists who know.